K-Mud Podcast presents.
And now it is time for Heart of the Earth. Support for K-Mud comes from Soham Health's Garberville Optometry, now serving Southern Humboldt with its mobile optometry unit, offering eye exams, screenings, and treatment for eye-related conditions. Glass fittings and contact lenses are also available, and they are open Tuesday through Thursday behind Garberville Pharmacy. More info at sohamhealth.org/optometry or 707-923-3921. And Camp Rosewater takes place September 26th, 27th, and 28th at the Salmon Creek Mountain View Retreat in Miranda, approximately 10 minutes from Highway 101. This three-day music and camping event benefits the Salmon Creek Fire Department and school. The event is hosted by Rosewater, a Grateful Dead tribute, and also includes performances by Money, performing music of Pink Floyd, Magnificent Sanctuary Band, interpreting music of Jerry Garcia, The Velvet Sea, performing Fish, Down a Dirty, a Dig in Dirt side project, and on Sunday, Norwood Fisher of Fishbone with Trujillo Desgracias presents Blackened Sabbath, a funk reinterpretation of Black Sabbath. Craft food and beverage vendors will be on site. Passes include on-site camping and will be available at the box office day of show. More information and pre-sale tickets at CampRosewater.com. Well, good morning and welcome to Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes and I'll be with you until 10 a.m. And today I have a packed show. I have 48 minutes of Leonard Peltier, but I do have a few things to say first. One, the passing of Robert Redford. That's why I played the song Life Goes On from Black Eagle, because Robert Redford was such an incredible friend to indigenous people, Native Americans especially. Oh my gosh, that work that he did. He had his Native workshops that he to show Native filmmakers, you know, how to do their best. Sterling Harjo wrote just an incredible piece. So did Julie Frusella. And I'll share those next week. As Sterling said, you know, he's the one that he physically came and showed me how to edit film. He did so much besides being an incredible actor. So, I just did not want, to go by without mentioning that. And short story, when I, Daryl Cherney and I went to, Sundance, we were trying to get funding for a movie about Judy Berry. And, that's when the Trudell documentary, that Heather Ray did was premiering at Sundance, and then after that, they, you know, after the movies, they always have like a big party, and you know, it's up in these real swanky places up in the hills. But Trudell was inside a bookstore, you know, right close to the freeway, a little, you know, not in the heart of Park City at all. And but we were saying, maybe Robert Redford will come. And I know Keanu Reeves was the one actor that came. And I went outside for a minute, and sure enough, there was Robert Redford just standing out there smoking a cigarette. So I went running back in. I said, "Daryl, he's out there. He's all alone just smoking a cigarette. Now's your moment." So Daryl took the opportunity and went out there and talked with Robert Redford. The one other thing I want to talk about is that show tonight at the Mateel, and I thought I had just said my piece a couple of weeks ago and was just going to, you know, let it go. But the promoter of the show stopped me at the farmer's market on Friday. And I like to be in a really good energy when I'm around food. I wanted to just get my pepperwood corn. He walked by and I just kind of smiled. And then he goes, "Agnes, I want to talk to you." And it was just the most incredible, craziest conversation that I've had. And because we were around a lot of people, I just, you know, kept my breath as best I could. But, you know, when someone says, "Oh, well, whatever happened to those young girls," you know, it's their parents' fault because they should have been there protecting their children. Those parents weren't protecting their children. You know, they weren't there to protect them to stop anything from happening. And I tried not to gag, but, I said, "Okay, huh?" And he kept going and going, and I put his hand on my shoulder. And then he said, "Well, you honor Bob Marley." And I said, "Well, of course I honor Bob Marley." He goes, "He has 11 illegitimate children." And I'm like, "What?" I said, "No, well, you know, he had a lot of children. Rita even raised him." He goes, "No, he had a wife." I said, "Have you read Rita Marley's book? I mean, she raised some of those kids. You know, children are children. They're family. I have, you know, stepchildren, in-law children. They're all family. We all come together. You know, we're family." And he said, "I just really had no, you know, I shouldn't be complaining about, this show tonight because, the Mateel let one of Bob Marley's illegitimate sons perform at Reggae on the River." I was like, I said, "We're talking about culture here. You know, they have a different culture than us. I'm trying to, you know," and then he says, "Culture." And then he starts talking about the Amish. Now, I don't know what people who ride in buggies and don't live with electricity and at 18 they let their kids go out and experience the world for a year. That's all I know about them has to do with a sexual, you know, predator performing in Redway tonight. I mean, the thinking was just kind of crazy. And then, oh my gosh, you know, he put his hand on my shoulder again and, you know, under my breath, I was going like, "Please," you know, but I just was smiling, you know, because I, you know, we're around people and around food. And then he decides he has to butter me up, you know, and, "Oh, you're this and you're that." And I'm like, my ego does not need to be fed. You know, if I do something for somebody and they thank me, I appreciate that. I really do. But I don't need ego strokes. That's not who I am. I don't do what I do for ego. I do it because it needs to get done. It's because I love Mother Earth. I love life. And so, you know, hand on the shoulder, you know, and then he starts telling this story that was just like, you know, how he was a victim of this and that. When I'm going like, "You know, it's really been good talking to you." And I gave him a hug and went to smile on my face to go buy my corn because I was buying it because I'm going to use it next week for a meal I'm making for K-Mud. So, you know, I have to laugh. Part of me was laughing inside and part of me was aghast. But I hadn't heard that word illegitimate in such a long time. I start thinking about, you know, reading Rita Marley's book. And I know she had... her last kid with Bob was a girl named Stephanie, and she was just a little bit younger than Stephen. And then Bob, you know, this woman came back from England with a daughter. Her name was Karen. And then she gave her the grandmother to raise, and Rita could see the grandmother was having a hard time. She goes, "Just give her to me." And she raised her, and she said, you know, Karen and Stephanie and Stephen, they were like triplets. They would just, you know, they did everything together. My gosh, I spent a lot, a good time raising my stepson, who I unfortunately lost a few years ago. We're all family. My son went and spent summer, part of this, you know, went and visited with his mother. Because we're all family. You don't call children, innocent human beings, names like that. It's just so unhuman. And man, I think we're all struggling every day to try to remember who we are as human beings while AI and all this artificial stuff is being thrown at us. I'm going to get into the interview with Leonard Peltier. He talks about Doug Durham, the man, the FBI infiltrator that infiltrated the American Indian movement. And then one part, my husband and Leonard were trying to get this microwave together. I don't know, it didn't get cut out. And it's just, I thought, I'm just going to leave it in because it's kind of funny that, you know, they're trying to get hot and cold. And, it's just human. That's, you know, just being human. And there's one little section that it gets quiet for about 15 seconds or so. But otherwise, enjoy this. Again, I recorded this on July 10th this past summer. Forget who it was now that rode on the plane with Biden, mm-hmm. coming back, I think maybe after he spoke about the boarding schools, you know, and talk to him about you.
Cardinals. Two Cardinals, there. One from Florida, one from New York, were fighting real hard for me. Francis just didn't seem to have the power or something, because Catholics put big pressure on Francis to get Biden to do something, but I guess he didn't quite have the power that they're supposed to have. I don't see why, how, though.
Yeah, well, I always...
Unless they're all, and I kind of believe it, unless they're all just corrupt.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I always said, if Biden's going to do it, he's going to do it in the last few minutes before he goes out the door. And I kind of feel like that's what happened. I think he knew ahead of time, but he waited till the vet, you know...
Well, he was notified that by a certain group. Biden, I'm really not a big fan of Biden. Biden's put some laws out there that were probably just put more people in prison than any president, really. He wrote some real fascist goddamn laws and had the president set Republican sign. He wasn't really a liberal as people try to portray him as. He wasn't. He was a very conservative person. So I wasn't really a big fan of his anyway. But I didn't think he was going to do it. I thought, nah, he's got too much dirt on him. As you can see, his sons and everything like this here, and they were threatening all that. And that's how the FBI keeps control of it. They get the dirt that's on you, the criminal corruption that you're involved in. And then they control you that way. That's how they do that. Hoover's the one that created.
That's okay. We are too. We're only 5 years behind you.
I don't have anything against him. I mean, you know, that's the way I look at it is, if that's your thing, that's your thing. Just don't oppose it on me or other people. I mean, you have just as much to believe in your sexual preference.
No, the more you watch people get elected president, you just have to keep believing that by the time they reach that point, they've had to sell out and people have got so much crap on them that they just, no matter what they tell you, no matter how progressive you think they're going to be, it just damn doesn't happen.
Well, I mean, a good example is Clinton went broke. And all of a sudden he gets enough money to run for governor again, get reelected, and then run for president.
Yeah.
He was broke. Where do you get the money?
Yeah.
You know, well, I happen to know from the people that was in prison and seen the evidence, I know now what happened. You know, he did make some statements that he said, they asked him, he said, as a president, did you make any mistakes? He said, we all make mistakes. Everybody, so we're human. And And they said, what's the biggest mistake you made, do you consider you made? He said, not freeing Leonard Peltier, because it cost him a lot of Native support and all this other stuff. But he was dirty. He was dirty. He was a politician that was dirty. And,
yeah.
I mean, by dirty, I mean he had corruption.
Right. On yeah. The,
but they held it. They held it. And now today he's a multimillionaire and all this. And now we see him hanging out in Mar-a-Lago.
Mar-a-Lago.
And him and Bill Gates and all them guys are all supposed to be political enemies and Trump. And they got all them young girls there and all. You see them current controversy going on.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to see that.
The list. Who's on the list?
Yeah, they're doing all kinds of freaky shit.
They were all there.
They ain't making that up. They're not making that up. They don't do that to each other. They don't do that. So they got to have, they keep they keep all the evidence hidden and always be able to control.
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to do this for me, or else I'll release this. That's how politics work.
Yeah.
And so I believe that Epstein, that they got files, they're calling it. Of course, Trump is saying, oh, release him. It don't really matter to him. He doesn't really matter to him anyway. He seems to get out of that.
Yeah.
Look at Stormy Daniels.
Yeah. Huh?
He owes her millions.
Yeah.
I think the biggest crime that he should be investigated, even though he has been convicted of 35 counts, of felony counts, if you are and I get caught with one felony, we go to prison.
Yeah.
He's got 35, and he gets to be president. But the biggest issue I think that should be investigated, remember his wife that he divorced before he was in his marriage? She wrote a book. Did you ever hear about this?
Mm-mm.
She wrote a book about her life with him and all this stuff, right? And she said that on his bedboard, every night, he had a book on there called Mein Kampf.
You know what Yeah.
Okay.
His story.
And he read a book, chapter every night. Went through that book. Started all over. He filed a lawsuit and offered to pay her millions of dollars to take it out of her book. Remember that?
Yeah. Huh?
Then all of a sudden, so she agreed with it, got the millions of dollars, or supposedly was supposed to, and all of a sudden she falls from the steps of her stairway and dies. Well, she's been walking up and down that step for, what, 50 years?
Yeah.
She never fell before. Plus, it's so goddamn rugged up. It's like falling on a goddamn...
Cloud.
Yeah. Huh? What the hell happened there?
And they wouldn't even give her a proper burial. They just buried her in the corner of one of those golf courses or something.
Yeah, I think the addicts should have killed her. They do that now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're dirty mother. But he says it, though. He says, I can shoot somebody on First Avenue, New York, and I'll never get tired. Huh? What happened, man? I left you guys in charge, and I come out, look what you guys have got running now.
I know, I kind
you
of...
You can't make this stuff up.
I know, and I...
they'll deny it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, sometimes I think, you know, if J.T. John Trudell was here now, what he would be saying, you know.
Even Dennis and them guys.
Yeah, I think about them all.
When they were younger, that 1,500 years did scare the shit out of them, though. Because it was with Dennis up and stuff like that. But Dennis hung on to the end. Yeah, pretty much to the end. The only thing that really saved him from prison was connections with Governor Brown and Marlon Brando and all. That saved him from going to prison.
I remember one
they,
time
they oh I'll tell you, this is again
from
this
WhatsApp
is,
+39331118268 message.
What? Okay, so you remember Doug Dern, right?
Oh yes.
You know his history? Doug Dern was, is he right? He's from Omaha, Nebraska. Right next to the border, city limits of Nebraska, like I told you, is the a big Dakota reservation, part of the Lakota Nation in Nebraska. That's where Marlon Brando was from. Well, that's also where Doug Dern was from. Doug Dern got on the police force of Omaha, Nebraska. And he started taking them young girls off of the reservation, getting them hooked, and prosecuting them. He selling them in the streets for whores. Okay, so he gets busted. He got found guilty. He pled guilty and made a deal. He was fired from the police station and went straight to work for the FBI. Signed a contract and everything. That's who Doug Dern was. And he was assigned to infiltrate the American Indian Movement and dig up as much as they could on Dennis and Russell and all of them. And after the trial, they had church secret hearings on domestic organizations in the Senate. Okay, so they asked Doug, he was there testifying, they asked Doug, what about the American Indian Movement? Do we have to worry about them anymore? What about their leadership? Doug Dern responded, and we got this stuff from Mark Lane. Mark Lane, who's working very close with us, used to be...
+39331118268 sent a long notification.
Mark Lane used to be the speechwriter for John Kennedy. All right, he came to work with us. He was a brilliant man. He was a Rhodes Scholar. This guy had his shit together. He was a top investigator and everything. Okay, he worked closely with us. He got all this evidence and from this hearing, because this is a secret hearing. And Doug Dern, they asked Doug Dern, they said, what about Russell and Dennis, do we have to worry about them anymore, the American Indian Movement? He said, no, you don't have to worry about Dennis and Russell no more, because that 1,500 years pretty much put the fear of God in them, and that they were going to have to go to prison for 1,500 years. They've really severely cut back on their rhetoric and but the person you got to worry about who refuses to get in front of the cameras and make public statements but is really well loved by the people and he's always in the front line is Leonard Peltier. That was a hit. Yeah. I was putting a hit on me. So I'm trying to get one on him. But we couldn't get him. And I know goddamn well he killed Janicita. I know he did. I just know he did. I was at this conference on the Menominee Reservation. And I was looking for Doug. I ain't gonna deny that. And me and my crew, we were looking for him. He was an infiltrator, lying, making false statements. He was trying to destroy the native culture and the rep treaties and all. He was an enemy to the people as far as we were all concerned. And we wanted to bring him to a trial on our people and so we can get some justice against these type of people, right? Traitors. So, I went to this big convention type of thing on the Menominee Reservation. So I'm standing back there. Not with police here or something. So he's standing there watching, looking in the crowd. I don't know who they're looking for. I think they were looking for me because I'm on 10 most wanted. So I walked up to Ron, I tapped them on the shoulder. I said, "Hey, bro, how you doing?" He looked, "Leonard, what are you doing here?" "What do you mean, what am I doing here? I got the right to come to this convention like anybody else. But they're looking for you." I said, "Don't worry about that." I said, "You looking for me?" He said, "No, I gotta go. And he took off. So, but just before that, in the crowd, somebody looked right straight at me, made eye contact with Doug Durham. And I looked, I said, smiling. And he waved at him, and he knew. He took off. But by the time I got to where he was at, he had already made it out the door. So I asked somebody at one of the meetings, I said, "Do you see Doug Durham?" He said, "Yeah, he just walked out the door." So I went out that door, and his car was just pulling out, right? And so I was asking those Indians about security. I said, "Hey, who was that Doug Durham?" They said, yeah. "Who was he with?" He said, "One of you, he was with Geneseca." I said, "Equal here?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Why didn't you guys stop him?" They said, nobody told us anything about him. We don't know. We don't know what's going on. We're just security guys. So the next day they find Geneseca dead alongside the road. He was the last one he was with. So, put one and one together.
Yep.
And that's the fact. That is the real thing that happened. But since he was an FBI agent, he got away with it. Killed Indian people, not in charge.
I know, just for myself, all my involvement, they opened up my mail.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
She was 50 miles away, and she said she don't know Leonard. There's no way she knows Leonard. They wrote her affidavit, and I burst out laughing when I read it. But I was more from relief. I said, "There's no way any court's going to take this. There's no way." And then sure enough, in Canada, the judge said, "I can't take something like this. This is who wrote this? Some idiot, or a third grader or something? Really? It's all in record. It's not something I'm making up." The judge said, "We can't accept this. We can't accept this type of evidence." And so they're going to turn me loose. The prosecutor started screaming, "Your Honor, I need a 10-day recess. I need a 10-day recess." And they only get one chance in extradition. This is already the second chance. And we were arguing that. He says, "You only get one chance, Your Honor. You can't be giving them chance after chance until they get it right." But the judge did it anyway. And I found out later because the whole Justice Department was behind it. So he goes to Rapid City, and then the prosecutor from Des Moines, Iowa, Evan Haltman, they flew into Rapid City, and they wrote the third affidavit of murder quarterback. They wrote it. And yet, in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and this is where I get one at a time, they get exonerated, the judge asked Evan Haltman. They said they knew he was the author. They knew. And they'll tell you why, too, here in a minute. They asked him, they said, "We don't understand how anyone could continue to extract information from this witness when it's quite obvious this is not a real witness. This is Murray Porter." And Evan Haltman said, "Your Honor, I want this court to know right now I had nothing to do with it. And the moment I read Little Porter's affidavit, I knew there was not one scintilla of truth." Quote, unquote. We published that ever since. And that exonerated. Should have. But the courts refused to exonerate and turn me loose. We find out later they were having secret meetings with the FBI. Uh-huh. The judges were. That's constitutional violations.
Yeah, you bet.
Then we found out later on they paid Canada $55 million to send me back. $55 million. I got that from the Solicitor General of Canada, who was pissed off at the corruption. And unfortunately, he died on me. Warren died on me about 10 years ago now. But he went and they did it. They forced them to do an investigation over there. So they did an investigation, a year-long investigation. And all of a sudden, they sealed it for 40 years. What? What the fuck? Because the warrant said, what? This is a criminal case. How do you seal a criminal case? What kind of fucking corruption is that? And, you know, they're, no country is supposed to do that, let alone Canada or the United States.
Yeah.
So Warren gets into the... He took him another year to get into review the investigation. And he find a document in there from the United States Justice Department that said, if you told her name was Ann McCullum. She was the Minister of Justice over there. It's like the Attorney General over here. Okay. So that lawyer said, if you put in your investigation anything that's harmful to the United States government's case on extradition and everything, we will withhold the $55 million we are sending you through the Joint Agricultural Laboratory. That's money laundering, that's violation of international treaty, and I can't get in the media to mention that. I don't understand that. But what are they, they're getting paid too?
Yeah.
A lot of them are. Yeah. They're still mentioning, well, they're still making it sound like Myrtle Porter might be, even be a real witness. Everybody in Ogallala, that caused a riot in Canada. They kept using, mentioning Myrtle Porter's name, and all the Ogallala people community were having meeting with Myrtle Porter was a witness. They were all there, and they got jumped up screaming, you're lying. You're lying in your court. You're lying. Just, she don't even exist. We don't know who she is. And the judge said, ordered the bailiffs to remove those people, and the riot broke out. Yeah. I had me in chains, so I couldn't do nothing. I was too. Double chained, the bangles, the wrist. You're the tell it was a... was the mass murderer that they were claiming.
Yeah.
That'll make it look real, I guess. Lucky they didn't put up a hood on my head.
So, how much faith did you have when they told you that Biden was going to release you?
Well, a day and a half before he signed it, I had already given up. I was laying in a cell. And I wasn't feeling good anyway. I figured I was going to die pretty quick. I didn't think I was going to live much longer anyway. So I said, well, I ain't getting out. I guess I'm going to die here. I was thinking to myself. But then I had one last thought. We got up to take a shower, and I was able to use the phone, so I called Holly, and I told Holly, I said, try this. It's the last chance. Try this. Use your connections. Go over there and tell Biden, give him a commutation of his sentence and home confinement. And so that's what I got. At the last minute. I heard different times. I heard 15 minutes before he was one out of office. I don't know what it actually was. So, but that's what I heard. They're making it dramatic, I suppose. But
they still made you wait 20 days.
Yeah, then he said, real prison did that. Made me wait 18 days. 20 days. Oh, let's see who this is. What the hell? I think that's what it's going to measure, and then they're going to fix my porch.
Nice.
So, it's good. I can't say no. I can't say wait till tomorrow. Could
you? Yeah. You gotta get well again.
Yeah. Yeah. Coming down here, we lived for close to 35 years, 3 miles up a dirt road with no electricity. You know,
so, we're completely comfortable coming down your gravel road.
Where did you live at? Where?
On the Mattole River. In Northern California in the Redwoods. Mm-hmm. But my arthritis got so bad that we had to move, get closer into town. Mm-hmm. So I could make it a little easier on me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Well, yeah. I used to be married to a Chumash Indian. Yeah. I think she still is. She's a regional director for IHS. She's a doctor.
Oh.
Yeah. I was married 5 times.
Oh.
Come in. Yes, sir.
Right. Nice. This house and stuff, and a car and everything. But they're coming in to make repairs and stuff on it. Help it make it a little bit better. The tribe is going to do that. They came in and repainted everything.
You got a nice little place
but,
here.
I got people passing around false rumors. I'm a multimillionaire. Give me at least 10% of that multimillion dollars.
Thousand would be good. Somebody want some coffee?
No, I'm good.
Well, anyway, but you know how people get.
Oh yeah.
They get jealous.
Yep.
Yep. That's how I felt when I saw that movie about anime.
Yeah.
And there was that woman there, and she didn't get charged or anything. And every time I heard her talk, All I could hear was jealousy. She was just jealous of Anna May. And that's...
I know.
It was so obvious.
That was Camus.
Yeah.
See, Dennis would plug in... excuse my language, but... Dennis would plug in Anna May. And Camus was pissed. So she's making up all kinds of shit about Anna May. Helping, making, encouraging it, and everything like this. I told her a couple times, shut up. But Anna May was not a snitch. And, but she was, she got paid $60,000, so that's another reason. But,
Because all my indigenous roots are from South America. My family's from Ecuador.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it is. Sometimes I would say, American indigenous movement. And then I heard that you said that, and I thought, oh, good, he understands.
Yeah. No, we're not Indians. You know what I mean?
Yep.
We're from here.
Not enough?
It's not enough. Yeah. He was in India.
That was his turn.
He names us Indians. And they got so many people brainwashed now. They're saying, we're still Indians. Well, go on to India then.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I'm nothing but a goddamn first one we call a communist and radical and all the other crap because all I want to do is get the truth put up. Man, I'm glad you brought that. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thank you for hanging on for that. Do you realize that's 50 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are pretty close.
Pretty close.
pretty close to 50 years old.
Okay.
You hadn't started your little signature with the arrow underneath.
Huh? How do you open that?
If you want, you can. I'm gonna open it for him, honey.
Simple, huh?
Oh. Somehow it got locked.
Huh? Press something.
Oh, no. There we go.
Oh. Let me see how this tastes.
It's easy enough to do
I
it
think
again.
This is good. Seems a little warm. Mm. Wow. What the hell's going on? The coffee still ain't warm.
Huh.
Let me read these letters again. Okay.
But we're still here. We're
we
still
are.
Here.
We are. We are. That's what I say. I say there must be a reason why, the other night I was thinking, you know, about John and Floyd and Neelock and Charlie and, you know, we're still here, though. There's a reason why we're still here. And
no, I mean, our people are. People are still here. Yeah. You know, some were dead now, but.
No. We're still here.
We're still here. We're still going to be here.
When they're on,
they, ain't
you know,
gonna, they ain't going to destroy us. They're
no. Gonna, that's what I always say. Everything else is going to fall. We're going to still be here.
Yeah.
Because we were here before and we'll be here after.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I, have
oh, yeah
a,
I believe too.
I have a funny thing about Charlie. We were, I think it was at an AIM West meeting and Floyd had passed. Charlie Hill.
Oh, Charlie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Floyd had passed. And everyone was talking about Floyd, and they get up and say, the late Floyd, the late Floyd, you know, the late Floyd. So Charlie gets up, and he goes, man, you people keep saying the late Floyd. I want you to know he's not late. He's dead.
Yeah.
And he just, you know.
But the thing is, he's not really dead either.
No.
We're mentioning his name today.
Yep.
We met how many times we mentioned Dennis today?
Yeah.
Their names are still alive. They're still alive, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh
so,
yeah.
See.
Yeah, and I one of my most
Sitting Bull's still alive. Astronomo. All those people fought for our nations. Crazy Horse. They're all still alive. You know. We're mentioning their names.
Yeah, I remember one time my daughter, she was 15 at the time, and she was going to go live with family in Ecuador. And we're in the San Francisco airport, and I look up, and there's Dennis, you know. And it was just out of nowhere. And so he gave us a really good one.
You ever hear him speak when he was younger? Younger it is. You used to make hair and back my neck stand up. He was good, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, very good. And it was just such a blessing to have him just say a prayer and send my daughter off, you know, so far away. It was really special.
I ran broke in Seattle, right? And so I went to work in the dam in Mizzou, Montana. I went conning my way into getting a job there. And so... Oh, man.
Got hot.
Well, that baby got hot. Okay, thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
So anyway, I was going to go work on, No, I decided to drop out of the movement for a while and go to work and stuff like this. So I thought I'd go to Grand Forks. What I was thinking of doing, going to Grand Forks to start a hot rod shop, right? Because it was just starting to take off and it was starting to become pretty popular. And I said, this is something of the future. And sure enough, it has been. But I was going to go to Grand Forks. So I stopped here when I was visiting my sister on Hoos School Road, and I heard Dennis talking on the radio. And I said, "Who is that, sis? Do you know who that is?" She said, "I don't know." Some Indian guy always talking about Indian rights and all this other stuff. And I said, "Man, this guy can speak." So I ended up in Denver anyways, about 6 months later or whatever, and I ran into Brennan Belcourt. That's how I really actually got into movement with him. And Lenny Foster. We're all young men then. And I ran into a Dennis in Leech Lake. We had a convention there. And I liked Dennis's platform on goals and stuff. No drinking, drugging, and strong advocates of Native culture, religion. And I said, "This guy's cool. This is who I'm going to follow. This is who I'm going to be a part of." So I got introduced to him and all this other stuff. And I let him know who I was and what I've done and stuff like this here. And so kind of like took a liking to each other right away. And I told him, I said, "You know, I can handle myself pretty good. If you need somebody to help you with security, I'll be glad to do that." So I became his security guy, one of the guys to start with. Anyway, I liked the way he spoke, the way he talked. I mean, he could move the crowd, boy. He was a good speaker. Russell was good, but Russell wasn't like Dennis. And Vernon was good, too. Vernon was good. He was a hell of a speaker, too. You know?
And it was so needed at that time, you know, when we started listening to him. Yeah. And it was Bill Wapapa who, you know, took me under his wings. Yeah.
Bill and us guys all created a treaty council. Yeah. I was one of the first guys that on there with them. They wanted to use my case and everything. I said, "Go ahead, build it.
Yeah,
these people, what they did to me, I knew I wasn't going to get, after what they did in Canada, I said, I'll probably never get out. They promised Canada I would only do 20 years, no more than 20 years, if found guilty, and they promised me a fair trial, which I wasn't getting a fair hearing in there, so I knew that was booze. But they said no debt penalty, and no more than 20 years in prison. Well, that was all a lie, as you all will now. And the only thing that wasn't a lie, to give me a legal debt sentence, they tried to, other ways. They tried to put a couple of hits on me. But all of that backfired on him. And here I am.
Yeah.
80 years old, sitting here talking to you guys. talking to
you. Yeah.
I lost your
spit. They ain't gonna shut me up.
No, I mean, that's, you know, that I first met Bill and John Trudell at I was part of one of the people put on a big rally to stop the Diablo nuclear power plant, and they came to speak, and that's when I first met him. And then just next year I'd moved to Humboldt County and I was trying to save the Sinkyone Wilderness, and at one point we were trying to get it, you know, and we had the thing was the Coastal Conservancy, and they came, they had this hearing, and they had, you know, their option one, option two, option three, and Fred Downing, Wallachie Elder, you know, was speaking. You know, we had 10 minutes, and he was speaking slow, and they stopped him and said, "Could you just speed it up, you know?" And I was like, oh, man. And it was my turn, you know, and they had done all, you know, they showed their charts and everything. And I started talking. I finally just stopped after a minute. And I said, I'm sorry, man. I'm hurting. I'm hurting the way you talk to my elder like that. I said, you didn't want to hear him. You want him to speed it up. We've all had to sit here and listen to all your things here. Yeah. I said, and I want to tell you something.
I
want to
tell him, speed your...
Door, you know, I said, you have your option one, two. I said, but the option you don't have, I said, is that you need to give it back to the people you stole it from. Mm-hmm. And that was when Bill just was like, okay, we need her. Because at that point, you know, Treaty Council was doing a lot of sovereignty and treaty rights. And I was coming from a place of, you know, we have to save Mother Earth. You know, it's all about Mother Earth. And Bill knew that that was the directions they really needed to go in. And so he had me, I had spoke at different places for him, at different colleges. And but the one thing, the one place I did go, I don't even know if I want to put this on here, is when literally handed...
I remember all that stuff.
Yeah.
I remember all that stuff.
Yeah, and so that's what I did, and I spoke for you there.
We went all over. I went down to Mexico, down them huts down there, Zapatas, the Zapatistas, or what do you call them?
Commando Marcos.
Commando Marcos. I met all those guys. Yeah, before I came to prison.
Wow.
We were reuniting.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we were all indigenous people. We're uniting. It's the only way we're going to win. And it's true today, too.
Yep.
You know, we just can't lay down, rest our necks, lay down, let them do that, what they want to do to us. And that's exterminate us.
Yeah, I remember being in Ecuador, I think it was 1989, and we were having a meeting, getting ready for 1992, mm-hmm. and we went to the village of Otavalo, and there was a whole group of us, and you know, they sang some traditional songs, and I'll never forget standing on that platform and singing the AIM song. You know, that platform was moving up and down. We were, but we, you know, it was just that sharing and that acknowledgement. And then the next morning, Sarah James and myself and another woman, she had brought a 2-pound box of See's candy, and it was 6 in the morning. We started eating chocolates and told stories for the next 4 hours.
But, yeah, after I was in prison for about 10 years, I think it was, some of the guys made the same trip that we had made to down there. How do you say their name?
The Zapatos.
Yeah.
The Zapatistas.
Zapatistas. And they went to some huts, right, that they had over there, because some of the people still living in huts. And he said, I went over to meet this guy. He was probably one of their leaders or whatever. He's living in the huts. He said, I went in there and I sat down, and there's a great big poster you sit tacked up against the hut wall. I said, really? He said, yeah.
After we'd gone together, and I had this old van, I had a free Leonard Peltier sticker in the, you know, in that van, and we crashed the van on the tip of Baja, Mexico, and left it there. I said, I know someone's driving around there in Mexico with this free Peltier sticker on the back of that van.
But there was this, you know, some of the, I guess they remembered me from, well, when we all went down there. But everybody, I couldn't believe there was that many. I thought all the Indians were pretty much exterminated out of Central America, but
no.
I met a lot of them, man. Yeah. I met a lot of them. Guatemala.
Oh, Guatemala, yeah, I spent some time, the Mayans in Guatemala.
These were cold-blooded Indians. These weren't cut.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
The mosquitoes on the east coast of Nicaragua.
Yeah, yeah.
Panama, the Kunas there.
Yeah. I was shocked that there were so many Indians left. I thought they pretty much did what they did to us here in America. They friggin' wiped us the full bloods out. When I was growing up, I think there was less than 30,000 full-blood Indians left here in America.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the number we got anyway. That's the number we were quoting.
I remember when I was in that, when I went to Ecuador.
That's all tribes, yeah. By the way. Yeah.
And this man up, and he said he was the chief of the Carib Indians, and he was from Dominica. I said, what? You know, I was just like, I went and talked to him afterwards because everything we heard, you know, they killed all the Carib Indians. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, you know, and he invited us. And we actually went to Dominica, this island that not many people know of in the Caribbean, yeah. And met with the Carib Indians. And that's just, I mean, I was just like, whoa, you know, you heard about the Arawaks and, the Caribs, and they were all killed. No, mm-hmm. We met with them.
Yeah.
And they're, you know.
Even in Cuba, there was some up in the mountains, mm-hmm. that were breeds, but they were natives. And Castro had said, you know, that was from the dictatorships prior to them. To them was the one who wiped them out.
Yeah.
It wasn't them, of course.
And the same thing with the Taiano in Haiti. And, boy, maybe about 25 years ago or so, they did, you know, took blood from all in this one region in the mountains. And 80% all had Taiano blood.
Mm-hmm.
They were all still there in Haiti.
Same way in Puerto Rico, 60% had Taiano blood. Yeah, that's pretty good. I thought they were all gone. They think they're all gone.
Yeah, well, last year, John Leguizamo did this thing, show on, he's just a part, season two is this year, but all about the Latinos in different cities.
Yeah.
And one of the places he went to was Puerto Rico, and that's where he met the native people, and they did a whole ceremony with him. And I was like, wow, in Puerto Rico, you know, they mm-hmm. showed that.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still here. That's the main thing.
Yeah. So what do you see for the...
All right, we're going to end it there. And again, you are listening to Leonard Peltier in a conversation I was having in his kitchen table. And I just left everything in, like, it was just a beautiful visit. And it was so much fun listening to him and my husband try to get this microwave going. It's just part of who, you know, it was just so natural. And he felt so comfortable just being natural with us, as opposed to having to sit and do a Zoom call and be very official. And I have a little bit more to play on this. I'll play it next week.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.